My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy. Just the two of us today. How's it going?
Just the two of us. I know. It's an intimate show, you know? It's really nice.
Well, intimate, but still spread out because we're still in the virtual studio, so we're not in studio together live. But, you know, thanks to technology, we can keep on doing the show.
Pandemic, you know, accoutrements are still with us. You know, some of the we've talked about this before on the show. I kind of like the fact that we are in this virtual studio because it means we can talk to people from all over the world, like our friends in Dublin or Lima or
New Zealand or Peru. Yeah. I mean, we've had
or California with Damon, which is great.
Right.
But there was something in the New York Times this past week. I don't know if you saw it about there's a lot of pushback about formalizing and making permanent one aspect of the pandemic that apparently a lot of people really like, but a seemingly small group of people really don't, and that's outdoor dining.
Oh, well, Greg, I hope you know that I'm among the small group. I don't like them at all.
Really?
Yeah. There's not enough standardization on their build, and our sidewalks and streets, I feel, aren't ready for them. You know, when you go to, say, Miami, which has plenty of outdoor dining, it's you're walking along the sidewalk, and then, you know, whichever direction towards the restaurant, there's a lot of space, and that's where their outdoor is, and then you go into the restaurant. Here, as you're walking down the sidewalk, you're effectively walking through people's restaurants because the sidewalks are so small, and we're doing the parklets in the street. I think they're kind of unattractive.
I mean, well, that's the thing, is they are unattractive, and I think it's because there hasn't been, as you said, a lot of standardization. I'm surprised to hear you come out against this, considering the last time I went to visit you, you were literally building a hutch outside of Amore Margo, which I assume the guys working on it were not working for free. So as someone with some money in this, I'm a little surprised to hear that, you know, even with skin in the game, you're against the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, it's it has done a lot to help my business survive. And many businesses, I'm sure. However, I don't like it, and I never intended for it. You know, I didn't open a business that had an outdoor service. We've had to adapt and overcome, and I will be pretty happy to see my outdoors gone. And we're gonna keep it till spring, and then we're gonna get rid of it.
So no more Spritz by Amore Margo, huh?
Well, right now, actually, we're almost finished in remodeling the hutch, believe it or not, which is going to be turned into these cozy little cubbies, and we're redecorating Spritz, and now we're calling it Loggia or Lodge by Amore Margo, and instead of long drinks that are effervescent using vermouth, bitters, and amaro, we're doing hot drinks using vermouth, bitters, and amaro, so Caldo Amari, and that's going to start. The plan was it was going to start today, construction. Then we said Friday, and now it looks like it's going to be next Friday. Construction.
Yeah. Well, as the sunshiny aspect here on today's show, since we don't have Damon Sunshine Bolte here, I'm going to come out swinging and say, I actually like these things. And I like them because, you know, I mean, eating outside when it's nice is fun. It's about to suck outside for a while in New York City. But beyond that, I kind of enjoy them from like an architectural standpoint. Like they're kind of like building jewelry. Like you don't really get to choose what the building that you move your establishment into looks like. But these things are this really fun, interesting way for places to like personalize themselves. Like there's a place near me. It's a dive bar near me that's built like freaking bookshelves outside of it with actual real books. One of them is actually my favorite book. I picked it up and started reading it one time while I was waiting for somebody. And I think that's kind of nice and fun, and I like them. That said, The New York Times article that I referenced earlier did quote from a lot of people who share your curmudgeonly take on it, Souther, but not necessarily for the same reason. There was some really there was this really amazing quote from one person who had this real pearl clutching thing of just like, I saw the first rat I have ever seen in my yard in 15 years of living in the West Village. It was like, oh, Jesus.
You are clutching your pearls and lying.
Stop. Yeah, exactly.
Four rats to every human being in New York, estimated, which probably means they're wrong. Come on, lady.
Yeah, those are the ones you can see. And also, I mean, it's just like, I'm sorry, you have a problem with your yard in the West Village? Like, oh no, someone bumped into my Jaguar on the street. Just like, let me pull out my sympathetic face. I think I left it in my backpack.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got their views on these things. I think for me, the bigger problem, the biggest problem with it, and I kind of agree with you, as time goes on, if people continue to do them, which, by the way, they've been free from the city to operate outside on the parklets. You have to build your own thing, everything, of course, but there's no cost to it. Starting next year, there'll be a cost. I think we'll see a lot of them go away immediately because of that. But also, if people want them, I think they will build, especially places that are new and just opening, they will build them nicer. Don't forget, I built mine thinking this is only going to last a couple weeks, and then we had to keep building on it and keep building on it, and many people have done the same. We none of us thought this was going to last 2 years. So I think that's what gives them this kind of shanty town vibe. They don't seem very well organized or put together because we were all thinking just make something last for a couple weeks and then, okay, well, now you got to add this because it's getting cold out, or now you got to add this because it's raining, you got to put a top on it or whatever. It's like the Winchester Mystery House.
I suppose, but it's also one of these things where it's like, I worry that we have this conception in this country of just like, well, we're not going to execute anything unless it's perfect. You know, that's why the public healthcare option is so fucked up, because we waited until it was like perfect, i.e. it was compromised to the point where it pissed everybody off equally, and now it doesn't work and it's too expensive, you know? Whereas with stuff like this, Jesus, you think that, if FDR had waited to be like, well, we're not going to release the New Deal until it's perfect, like it would have provided such, immediate relief for the Great Depression. No, he threw a bunch of legislative shit at the wall and saw what worked and what didn't. And I think this is kind of like that. We acted fast. We were in a crisis. We created this thing. And now we're in a process of having to figure out, once we have the luxury of some breathing room, okay, what are we going to do? And how can we make it work better? And part of the rhetoric that bugged me about this piece is that there's always this sort of – it played at this tension between like businesses versus the neighborhood. And there was one quote from a restaurateur whose name escapes me, unfortunately, but it was very smart, who was like, look, I'm all for figuring out the right way to do these. He's like, you think I want rats and trash all over the street too? He's like, no, I live here. I work here. Let's work together and find a way that we can make it right. So I hope that that's the outcome that we get, and not, take it down because I want my parking space back.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get
– That would be thievery – of something that I think we all enjoy. And speaking of which, Souther, who do we have in the studio with us today?
Today, we've got John McNulty, owner of the new bar, Thieves, in Williamsburg. John, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Souther.
Man, super glad to have you. And want to talk to you about Thief, but I want to roll back the clock a little bit and talk about your career in this field and your time working with Swine and most notably the Cocktail Kingdom Hospitality Group. So let's get into that a little bit.
One actually led to the other a little bit.
Well, yeah, exactly. In the same location as Katana Kitten, right?
Right. And Greg was an investor in Swine.
See, Greg, I had no, Greg I didn't, I, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that at all. That's pretty crazy. Not that I like keep tabs on Greg Boehm's life, but I had no idea that he was involved in Swine.
Yeah, he was. I've been friends with Greg for quite a while, and I had come to him with the Swine business plan, and he ended up throwing some money in, and then when my partners were kind of ready to get out, I had already sold my shares at that point, but when they were ready to get out, I went to Greg with the location and said, listen, man, like, I don't think we should let this location go. Swine lasted 5 years, but there were, you know, we had some hiccups and there's a reason it, you know, didn't last a little longer. I knew that something could be a giant success in that location.
And you're obviously quite correct about that, because now it houses Katana Kitten, which gets accolades, accolades on top of accolades, 14th best bar in the world, according to World's 50 Best, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And in short order, how old is Katana at this point?
We opened in 2018. They opened in 2018. I am not a part of Katana anymore. But, you know, I was a part of the opening and was very proud of what we accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, just such a unique space where you enter kind of on the mid-level floor and you go up to the bar or down to the lower bar.
Yeah.
And the team that you have over there is just incredible. Like Masa is, I don't think I've ever caught that guy not smiling.
He's unbelievable. Like, honestly, hospitality wise. Yeah. I think he's one of the best I've ever worked with. Just, you know, he really makes people feel great.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. There's a point in time, because I've known him for some years now, there was a point in time where I was like, this guy's fake. This is a fake guy, right? But then it just keeps on going year over year, and you're like, okay, it's not an act. This guy's just this way. This is just how he is. It's incredible. So Swine is done. Katana Kitten, you're no longer part of, but you were running Cocktail Kingdom's hospitality group, which is huge at this point, right?
Yeah. So when I joined right around 2017, I believe, they only had Boilermaker and the original Mace at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, the way this all kind of happened was me bringing, you know, the space to Greg and being like, listen, like, you know, and he had already been talking to James and Masa, about doing
James
something.
Toon, yeah.
James Toon, exactly. They had a concept in mind, and then yeah, like, you know, over that next year, Katana Kitten came to life, and I kind of you know, almost wrote myself a little bit of a job description for Cocktail Kingdom. You know, talking to Greg for a while, saying that, you know, I thought he could use kind of someone that was really focused on the hospitality side, since he had some other projects he wanted to get off the ground. So that's how my career there started. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, so we went, you know, we did Katana Kitten, and then we went on to do Existing Conditions, which unfortunately, you know, isn't there anymore, but houses the third iteration of Mace.
Yeah, which I still haven't gotten over to see that one. I only got to see the second location a couple of times because, you know, kind of the pandemic gets in the way of everything.
Right. So I opened that one as well, and opened the cabinet with them, and also did a remodel on Boilermaker. So it was a busy few years that I was with them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Greg's not known for sort of standing around and resting on his laurels.
No.
For sure.
No. And I, you know, I'm kind of the same, which is, I think, why we get along so well. You know, I was all about it. Like anytime he had an idea, I'm like, let's do it. We can do it. So, and you know, you got to get over to that.
I have that same affliction.
Yeah.
too much. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like I can carry any load. Just sure. One more thing. Why not?
Let's do it. So you know, it's funny because my background, you know, previous to Cocktail Kingdom was very restaurant focused. You know, I worked for Gabe Stolman, and I worked for a bunch of really great restaurateurs in New York City. Cafe Luxembourg was my first job, moving into New York City. So it's funny that it kind of transitioned me. You know, I was always into bars, of course, and I was a beverage director for most of the restaurants that I worked for. So, but it did transition me into this mindset of not really wanting to open another restaurant, you know, because Swine was pretty much a full on restaurant, and I think that really turned me into the mindset of let's do a bar.
Yeah, and now you've transitioned out of the Cocktail Kingdom family, and right, you've opened your own bar, Thief, in Williamsburg, which you opened just back in June.
Correct. You know, funny enough, the whole thief thing came about by one of Greg's friends coming to us while I was still at Cocktail Kingdom. Excuse me. He was looking for some consultation on turning a gelateria into maybe just a wine and beer bar to start over in the East Village. And that was kind of so Greg and I were going back and forth with it, and we were, you know, bouncing ideas back and forth. And then it got to a point where I actually came up with Thief. I showed Greg kind of the, you know, a brief kind of concept laid out. And then I was like, you know, would it make more sense if I did this on my own, since it doesn't, you know, we weren't going to be able to get a full liquor license right away. The place didn't have an existing liquor license, being a gelateria. And, you know, I started thinking, me with like kind of more of a beer and wine background, you know, maybe this made more sense if I just kind of went on my own and did it. And Greg was like, do it. So that's where it was originally going to be last year. And I left Cocktail Kingdom in January to focus on it.
I was going to say, I just want to hear you talk a little bit about the name, because clearly the name is something that is very important to you, and something that it seems like you put a lot of thought into.
Yeah. So Thief is derived from, you know, the pipette like tool that is used in any sort of barrel tasting, whether you're at a distillery or a brewery or a winery, when you're extracting liquid from a barrel and putting it into a glass, they call that a thief. So in the wine world, it's called a wine thief. In the, you know, the whiskey world, it's called a whiskey thief. I always thought that was cool. I actually have friends in New Haven, Connecticut, that own a wine store called The Wine Thief. And I always thought that was such a great name for a wine store. And it was always kind of in the back of my head. So yeah, when I laid down that concept for a beer and wine, when it was just going to be a beer and wine concept, that's where Thief came from.
I kind of love that. And it's also, I mean, you talked a little bit to us before the show about this idea of like stealing back time, right?
Right. Yeah. So the whole, you know, so after the, you know, lockdown and once I, you know, so the first one in the East Village was derailed. And then I went back to work for a group I was working for in Westchester, because they, you know, never lost indoor dining besides during lockdown. In July of last year, I went back and worked for this group called Fortina, which has a few locations in Westchester and Connecticut. And then while I was doing that, though, a couple of my investors had dropped out, but I still had a solid investor that really still believed in the concept and wanted to do it. So I continued to look for investors, and I put it all together. And meanwhile, this was all going on, this spot across the street from my apartment became available. And that's how we ended up in Williamsburg.
Well, that's convenient.
Rather than the East Village. Yeah. And, you know, had an active liquor license and, you know, full 4 a.m. liquor license, you know, it all like came together and really, you know, kind of, you know, one of the good things that came out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
For me,
there's a bit of like strange guilt when you realize there are good things that came from the pandemic. It sucks, but it's true.
For us anyway. Yeah.
You know, for lots of people, anytime something's going on, whether it's good or bad, there are people who are winning and losing, and there are ways to win even when things are shit.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you got the space. It's a cute little spot. I know the space pretty well. And it's just off the park there in Williamsburg, which I'm sure drives a good amount of business of folks who want to have a glass of wine or a beer before they go to the park, and some cool snacks.
For sure. And sorry, Greg, I never really answered your steal back time question. So to answer the original thought, the steal back time, once, you know, we went through this whole ordeal, ended up getting the space, you know, not post pandemic, but post lockdown and all of that. And when the world started opening up again, we kind of came up with this concept of, you know, steal back the time that you lost during that year and a half, you know?
Yeah, man, I love that. And I love that idea of like, you know, bringing back, just acknowledging that something was lost there, not like trying to pick up right where we left off and like brush ourselves off and like, oh, that was weird. But, you know, having the space to, you know,
acknowledge that we all collectively went through something horrifying, but also, like you said, like there were moments that came out of it that weren't as bad. There was growth, there was transition. And I think, you know, the perfect spot to celebrate that weird liminal space of like, well, it wasn't all bad. It certainly wasn't all good. It was just a trying time. The best place to celebrate that in my mind has always kind of been like the corner neighborhood bar, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. It's a hub of society, and it kind of always has been. Well, this seems like a good spot to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come back and keep talking to John McNulty about the state of neighborhood bars and what does the return of New York City mean for bars in general. And then definitely want to talk about Miracle. So stay tuned.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you. My Family Recipe from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. You were listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking with John McNulty from the newly christened Thief in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And before we went into the break, we were talking a little bit about neighborhood bars and what they mean to all of us, have always meant. But we want to talk a little bit about what you, John, think the state of the neighborhood bar is right now, how that might have changed and where it might be going in the future after the really crappy 2 years that bars and restaurants have had across the world.
I mean, I think that it was, it's profoundly unfortunate some of the neighborhood bars we lost in this past, you know, year and a half, couple of years. I lost a couple of my favorite ones, a couple that I even, you know, had a part in opening. It really meant a lot to me to be able to open this place and, try to be, a neighborhood bar that feels kind of normal. We got really fortunate with the timing. We opened June 23rd. So basically like a couple weeks after everything was kind of dropped, you know, all the restrictions were dropped. So we opened up as a normal bar with, we actually were vax only, the entire time, pretty much, even before the mandate, we didn't do the mask thing, and kind of just did the vax only. But I think the neighborhood bar right now is definitely on an upswing from what I can see in my neighborhood. Like all the bars around here that I like to go to seem to be thriving because people want to get that time back that they lost not being able to sit at that bar and enjoy the things that they enjoy about these places.
Yeah, man. And I think it's one of those things, you know, I think about this a lot, about the last show that you and I did in March of 2020. I think it would have been March 11th. It was with the crew from the Up and Up. And it was in the studio behind Roberta's. We met like normal. We had pizza. And I remember we were talking about the coronavirus at the start of it. And we're like, oh, this is getting pretty scary. Because I think the night before, like the NBA had just called off the rest of its season.
Yep.
And I am so thankful that I didn't say what was on my mind then, which is like, look, neighborhood bars are going to be fine. Like, no matter what the crisis is, people are always going to want to have a place to go and drink and commiserate. And Who am I glad I kept that to myself until now? But I think, you know, now it's sort of what we're talking about with John. It's a little bit of, you know, retroactively, now that it's once again safe to go out to these places, it's true, because that is the spot that you want. You want that third place where you can congregate and commiserate and be around people who, you know, just by their geographical location next to you at the bar, have something in common with you, you know?
So, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it was one of the things that I missed the most, was being able to, you know, sit at a bar, you know, even when we started, you know, doing kind of these soft openings with indoor, you know, New York City still wasn't letting people actually right. sit at the bar, which is just really important to me. You know, I was going back to kind of Connecticut and the places that were still allowing people right. to sit at bars so I could sit at a bar.
Right. So you at least had a little escape and a little pressure valve that you could release when needed.
Right.
Because, yeah, it definitely was the thing that I missed. I still, you know, it still reverberates. I'm very, very happy that New York City still mandates that we check for vaccines. It makes me feel a lot more comfortable to go to places and sit close to people and commiserate and get back into that swing. And I don't know what I missed the most, frankly, involves obviously sitting at the bar, but it was meeting people. Just chatting with some random stranger in New York City is part of the charm of living in New York City. And to have that taken away for a lengthy period of time was really one of the greater amenities to living in this city that was removed from my, you know, use. So really happy to see bars back open, and happy to see the bars are opening. It's inspiring and reassuring to know that you're out there and you cranked open a place during the pandemic. So stoked for that.
Thanks, man.
No, I really appreciate it, and I'm going to make my way over there. I'll make a statement right here. I'll be in your bar before the weekend is over.
Oh, wow.
There you go. My buddy Todd and I, we've been trying to take long walks because we both gained some weight during the pandemic, and we've walked past Thief several times. So I'm just going to say, let's pull in here. Kind of counterintuitive to the walk, but you know.
That's exercise, everyone. Speakeasy endorses healthy living in moderation.
In moderation, all things in moderation.
Do you live in the neighborhood?
I live in Bed-Stuy now. Okay. Right. I had to move during the pandemic because of the pandemic. I got evicted. So I live in Bed-Stuy. Speaking of moderation and the lack thereof, you graduated from the Greg Boehm Cocktail Kingdom School of Hospitality.
I did.
You're walking out of there with a lesson, which is miracle works. So you're going to do miracle.
I am going to do miracle. This is going to be, you know, so I obviously was involved in them when I was with Cocktail Kingdom, but
no way not to be, I would assume.
No way not to be. Previous to that, I actually was one of the first franchisees. I believe it was myself and Mockingbird Hill in DC. Mockingbird Hall or Hill?
I think it was Hill. Yeah, it was Jack Brown's place, right?
Right. We were the first, and I think they signed on second or vice versa, but we were the two first franchisees of Miracle. I did one in Norwalk, Connecticut, called Miracle on Wall Street. Yeah.
Awesome. Just for edification of the listener, describe what Miracle is and then talk to us about what is going to happen at your bar during and because of Miracle, because I've seen this happen at bars. It's powerful.
So, I mean, obviously, Greg Boehm would be the one to really talk about this, but I will tell you what I know, which is a bit. You know, Miracle is a worldwide franchised holiday pop-up cocktail bar. It came about when Greg first got the space in 2014 for Mace, the first Mace on 9th and C, and he had some time to spare right in that November, December area. I forgot exactly what they were waiting for build out wise or something like that, but they I believe it was Greg's mom, which is funny since it's a Jewish family, that said you should do a Christmas bar. I always got a kick out of that.
How many Christmas songs are written, performed by Jewish people? You never hear any Jewish Hanukkah songs, you know?
So,
it's an opportunity, you grab it.
That was how Miracle was born. And it was a giant success its first year. And basically, you know, the key, I think, to it being a success is really making it vomit Christmas. It's just over the top, kitschy, cheesy, old yeah. school kind of Christmas decorations. And it, the cheesier you get, I think the more it works.
I think the best ones that I've been to are the ones where you are not looking at a snow globe. You are inside the fucking yeah. snow globe.
Oh, yeah.
You are looking out.
That's a good analogy. So we did that first one in Norwalk, Connecticut, and that was a huge success. I couldn't believe it. Made a lot of my friends mad, actually, that were bar owners in the area, that I just came in and took over the upstairs of an existing bar. And we had a line around the corner for about, you know, I only did it for 16 days that first time, actually, because I signed on late, just kind of decided to do it. But anyway, this year at Thief, we will be doing Miracle on Union, which actually opens next Tuesday. We close this Sunday and turn the entire place into putting you inside a snow globe, as Souther said. We're doing a little bit of a Grinch theme because, you know, he was a thief.
I love it.
So there's going to be a little bit of a Grinch theme. We may or may not have an 11-foot inflatable Grinch that's going to be outside of the bar.
No, it's actually 12 feet.
Yeah. And yeah, we're super excited about it. My head bartender and a couple bar backs are, as we speak, over there making these pretty intricate syrups. The thing about Miracle, I gotta say, is the cocktails are not just some cloyingly sweet holiday cocktails that you might picture. They're super well balanced.
Well, right. Coming from the team that it comes from, the reputation has to stand, right?
Exactly. So, I think that is another reason that people go and actually have the cocktails and are kind of, a little bit blown away that the cocktails are as good as they are. But I can attest, we don't have a full kitchen, right? So these guys are over there with induction burners right now, making about, 12 different syrups that we need to pull these cocktails off. We're super stoked.
I mean, I talk to my good friend Laura Newman about doing Miracle down in Birmingham.
Yeah.
She's been doing it. She kind of did it the true Miracle way. She got a space. She was getting ready to open. She franchised into Miracle, did Miracle first, then opened her bar, right? Which is kind of how the original happened.
I love it.
And she talks to me about, they fly people in. They bring in a team of folks from all over the country, bartenders, and they put them up in her house. She's got 5 bedrooms, so they can put them up, and they come in and they just do Miracle, and it's just a slaughterhouse. And people love it, and people wait in line to get in, and the drinks are delicious, and the team is excited. And I don't know, it gets me excited to talk about, because I feel like it's such a crazy thing, which then makes me wonder, if Miracle's doing so well, why wouldn't you do a Halloween bar for October? Why wouldn't you do fucking July 4th bar in the summer?
Says the guy who opened up an occult bar in October.
Hey, listen.
Well, a lot of people asked me that after I did the Miracle in Norwalk. They're like, why don't you do a Valentine's Day bar? And my answer was like, who wants to celebrate Valentine's Day for a full month? I don't know.
I don't want to do it for a day.
Most people don't want to celebrate it the day. And, same with, Easter. And, they're like, you could do it for every holiday. I really do think that Christmas and possibly Halloween you could get away with are the only holidays that anyone wants to celebrate for a full month.
Well, Moria Margo is, the original space is 240 square feet. And we've kicked around the idea each year jokingly, but jokes often lead to truths. Mountain Sues. We've kicked around the idea year over year of doing sort of a Krampus bar, because we're all stirred drinks, all bitter drinks. We could easily do like this sort of anti-hero Christmas situation.
Yes.
And you know, but then we stop and say, fuck it, we're busy enough as it is.
when we did 12th Street Miracle, we had a whole Krampus corner when they did Miracle on 12th Street. I guess that would have been 2019. Yeah. And they a whole like wallpapered kind of Krampus area, which I just think is super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that, you know, Thief is off the ground and hopefully doing well, but I know that Miracle is going to give you a real shot in the arm and it's going to push you right into the next year.
I hope. Thank you, Souther. I hope so. We're very optimistic. We are getting bombarded with emails. We've gotten some great press. We're the only one in Brooklyn this year. You know, there actually used to be like two or three in some of the past years within Brooklyn. Yeah. So I think we have a huge advantage there. I've been, you know, getting bombarded with emails since like the Time Out and Secret NYC just did articles about Miracle on 9th and Miracle on Union. You know, people looking to reserve tables, which we don't do, but it's nice to hear that.
There's interest, right? Are you going to, I know that when Derek Brown did all his pop-up stuff, including Miracle, he didn't allow people into the bar. I mean, rather he didn't take your number and let you leave. You had to stand in line outside. So he would have lines down the block.
I mean, that's what Greg has done in the past on 9th Street as well. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how that would work with where I am and my neighbors. You know, like, I mean, I think that's what it really comes down to.
Sure. You want to be a good neighbor.
I want to be a good neighbor. I think that, you know, I really believe that we're just going to take numbers, you know, and people sure. can, you know, we've got Casa Publica, which has a fairly big bar across the street. And, you know, Pete's Candies. There's a few bars in this the neighborhood. Silver Light Tavern, which I love.
I love Pete's Candy Store, man. That place is awesome.
And Pete's is awesome. Yeah. So there's places people can go and hang, and we'll just, you know, shoot them a text. I think that's the way we're going. I gotta say though, I do love the line, the way the line worked at 9th. It was really cool. You know, and we'd go out and talk to people while they were in line. You know, I do kind of like that, but you know, it is winter. So
yeah, I mean, there's something kind of charming about that. Well, not about winter, fuck
right.
winter, but
right.
you know, there is something a little charming about the sort of the camaraderie of like, yeah, we're gonna wait in line for this.
Yeah,
but I also, I don't know, I do wonder what would happen to that. You know, as we're asking people to stand in line again for a place for the first time since, you know, March of 2019, because, you know, people are like, well, you can take my phone number now. Like, why do I have to do this endurance contest to prove that I like want to be inside of this bar, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I think it's something to do with spectacle. You know, when Derek Brown did Game of Thrones pop up, he spent over $10,000 having the throne replicated.
Right.
And people stood in line, he told me, for over 4 hours to get in. And then they'd stand in line for 2 or 3 hours to get in the chair and take a photo of themselves.
Oh my God.
So people are willing. And he said it became a scene outside, you know, people getting Chinese food and pizzas delivered. And
yeah,
I think with the relaxed restrictions, or at least the fact that, you know, people aren't really enforcing a lot of stuff right now, you might be able to get away with doing, I don't know, if it's winter, they're standing in line, you serve them some hot chocolate with some booze in it outside.
or it's a good thing we still have all those outdoor dining hutches, right, fellas?
Oh, jeez. Oh, rats.
Well, I don't know if I ever told you this, Souther, but when the first ever Miracle launched in D.C., which I think was, other than yours, John, the first one outside of the original location, my... Yeah. Roommate at the time was working at a place called All Souls, which if you're ever in DC, check it out. It's amazing. It's one of my favorite bars in the city, but it's around the corner from where Mockingbird Hill is. And he came back one day from work with like this dazed look in his eyes. And I was like, dude, what happened? He like rough day at work. He's like, I don't know, man. There's like some sort of pop-up Christmas bar that opened up around the corner. And like people are waiting for like 3 hours to get in. And then they're coming to me and they're like covered in candy canes. And I didn't know what to do. It was too much.
That is funny.
Yeah. Well, John, what you got an Instagram. I'm trying to look it up right now. What is it? Thief BK?
That's correct, yes.
So Thief BK is where you can follow along with what's going on at Thief. And I'm assuming you're going to have it's going to be all miracle takeover on your Instagram as well.
It will be.
Look, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, there's a countdown.
yeah. We got the countdown going.
I know a lot of bars that do Miracle and Sip and Santa that have a separate Instagram account just for it. That it's nuts.
It's funny. You know, I was talking to my PR company yesterday about that. I was like, you know, why are we not doing a separate Miracle one? And their response was actually logical. It being our first year, sure, we're deciding to like just keep all the focus on Thief, you know, to build that awareness. And then we'll take the holiday content down once Miracle ends. And then next year, we'll probably start a Miracle on Union, you know, God willing that we're still
sure,
here.
The holiday, the holiday content that you generate here, you can take it off of this one and put it on the other one.
Exactly. So I think that'll be the plan, is that next year we will have our own, you know, Miracle on Union Instagram. We are going to have a Miracle on Union Google page, you know, so that when people Google it, that it will pop up and they can, and they can add pictures there.
That's really smart.
Yeah.
Well, John, thanks so much for spending your time with us and talking to us about your illustrious career and also the cracking open of Thief. And as I said, I'll make my way in there before the weekend is over so I can see it for myself. I've only seen it from the outside.
We look forward.
Maybe I'll take a nice long constitutional over there as well.
Join us, Greg.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, get some fresh air. Get some exercise, you know.
We'd love to have you guys.
Perfect.
Well, John, thanks again for joining us and spending some time with us here on Speakeasy. Really appreciate your time and talking to us about everything you've got going on and looking forward to coming over and seeing the bar and encourage people to come over to see you as well. Miracle begins again on what day?
November 23rd, so next Tuesday.
Ah, my birthday.
What?
We finally found out what day his birthday is, guys.
Shit. Edit that shit out of there, Matt. Edit that shit out.
Everyone wish him a happy birthday on Instagram. He'll love it.
Yeah. I've got nothing left, Greg, if you want to take us out.
Well, sure. I just wanted to say one last thing. This is going to be our final show before Thanksgiving. So for all of you that are traveling, safe travels, whether you're with your family or your friends, hope you're around people that you love and appreciate you and fill your life with warmth and joy. And I also wanted to say that since November is Indigenous Heritage Month, if you are concerned about, you know, the problematic legacy of Thanksgiving and that particular piece of American mythmaking, our guest from last week, Chalky Tom, has some really, really great resources that you can check out. And maybe, you know, if you feel so moved on the fourth Thursday of Thanksgiving, make a little donation to a organization of your choice. Maybe give a little bit back this time.
Yeah, that sounds brilliant. And Chalky's a great resource. I just want to say a quiet shout out to my friends and my team down in North Carolina at Dram and Draft. Just suffered a great loss yesterday and just want to let them know that we're thinking about them and we'll be thinking about them all throughout the holidays as well. But that's all I've got for this episode of The Speakeasy. Thanks for tuning in. Check out heritageradionetwork.org where you can check out many more shows just like this one. There's a beating heart icon on there somewhere. You can click on that to donate to keep the shows on air. And thanks for always joining us. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. So you don't
shun the devil with your. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.